hello and a very good evening to you, and here we go again. It's time for the May edition of our cricket chat show here at Suzy 103.4. This is On the Front Foot. My name's David Jay. Just a quick bit of housekeeping. Tim Bowling's the other side of the panel as my co-presenter, as usual. Andy Tharp is here as our guest pundit for this month. That's Andy Tharp of Mogadore Wanderers. And we're going to be joined, a slight change to the originally intended schedule. We're going to be joined after 8 o'clock by Matt Camp, who organises the Surrey Slam. Tim, it's turned into typical cricket weather out there.
Yes, we've already started with the rain, haven't we, outside, but it's good to be here. Good evening to you.
Let's get on with some cricket chat. Andy Tharp from Mogadore Wanderers, brilliant to have you back.
Oh, great to be back. Thank you, David, for having me.
Jolly good. And let's kick off as we mean to go on. What are the prospects in the season of 2019 for the Mogs?
Well, we got our first game of the season on Sunday. Hopefully we're going to be competitive like we were last year. I mean, last year we had a very good season. We won more games than we lost. So we're hoping that we can, you know, recreate that. But yeah, no, it's looking good. It's looking good. We've got some good youngsters, you know, sons of current players that are coming through, are doing really well. So yeah, hopefully it'll be a good season for us.
The younger generation's so important for Wandering Cricket,
oh,
isn't it?
Huge. Yeah, it's vitally important. Yeah. Vitally important.
And how far are you now from the sort of third generation?
Peter Ferner, he's definitely, I think he plays, you know, over 70s cricket now. So yeah, I think we do have a wide age group from, you know, say Peter in his mid to, you know, in his 70s through all the way down to on Sunday we've got a son of one of our players, a young guy called Will Riddy, who is 15, 16 years old and a very good leg spinner.
Familiar faces around at the Mogs?
Oh yeah, you still see the same old faces, you know, Alex, myself, Charlie, Will Parker, Joe Lewis. I mean, all the old favourites are still there, still plodding away, doing our best to recapture our youth.
Aren't we all trying to do that?
But seems like a long way away for me, I've got to say.
Oh, don't be silly, Tim.
I fear it's pretty much left me behind. Well, that's the news of the Mogs. And Tim, what we're really going to try and do this evening is to look at the local scene for about half an hour, and then perhaps look at the professional game, and then Matt's coming after 8.
Yes, Matt will be here just after 8 o'clock, hopefully, so we can talk to him about the Surrey Slam then.
And we'll look forward to that. You've got the article from the Winter as a basis to grill
him
with.
Yes, that's right. He had a big article in the Wisden Monthly a couple of months ago. It was about a 3 or 4 page spread in there, so that was good. So
Failed miserably to mention On the Front Foot.
Yeah, we're going to have a word with Matt about that.
You can't have everything. And if things go according to plan, we'll probably, the four of us, have a chat about the England set up and the prospects for the World Cup towards the end of the show, but we'll see how that goes. Now, there might be a bit of me, but I'll try and call you both in as I can, because news from the clubs first and foremost. And Andy, have the Mogs ever played at Salford's?
We haven't, no. I mean, it's a lovely ground. We have thought about it in the past.
Petridgewood Common, which has its advantages and its disadvantages, main road and very, very open access, which obviously does present problems from time to time. Sanjay Patel came in, Tim,
last
year.
That's right, yeah, he did.
The chairman, and he tells us that the club is kicking off a rebuild of the pavilion. The intention is to make it as green as possible and having community input. I suppose that's something a wandering club doesn't have to worry about, had to.
No, it doesn't, but I think as a wandering club, we're also very aware that, because we don't, and we can never offer a return fixture, we always try and support local clubs. And, you know, we've given donations to the likes of Colt Harbour when they were doing their pavilion. So yeah, we're always looking and trying to help clubs wherever we can.
And clearly the whole eco aspect, Tim, is becoming more and more important, whatever you may think about it politically. And certainly in terms of a space for community use, any new space has got to be good news, hasn't
it? Yeah, I guess as well, presumably there's better access to funding and things like that if you offer more of a sort of green type development with some of these pavilions. So, and good luck to them, though. It's good.
Well, if anybody wants to pitch in and help Salford's, Bruce Tissington, I believe, is the man to get in touch with. They're focusing on sustainability and community involvement, space with facilities that cater for external use. They had an inter-club warm-up game and a post-match social, and a very good turnout, Salford's tell us. They lost last Saturday by 61 runs. They've got a new website and app streamlining communication, and the league kicks off this week. More of that in a moment. So that's Salford's. Hawley, Trevor Stevens and Stuart Warren came in last month.
Yeah, last month they were with us, weren't they? Good guests.
Trevor's always good value, yeah. And Stuart, yeah, as chairman, had lots of ideas. Now, you'll know Hawley of old.
Yes, I do. I've played there many a time.
Scored a few runs on that lovely flat wicket.
I have been known to score a few. I think once was for one of your teams, the old grammar school team.
You actually played there for me against, it was Allied Breweries on tour, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think, as a Hartswood occasional.
Yeah, that's right.
Was that the year we surprised them when Neil Bezodis and Toby Briggs were 10 and 11 and knocked them off?
Yes. Yeah, I think that was, yes.
So you're putting ringers in the team, is that right?
No, I wouldn't say they were ringers, but no, it was a good game. I remember it was a very good game.
That was a case of bowlers who were talented batsmen being bowlers, and therefore batting 10 and 11, because they had a bowl, and as it was just as well. And Hawley's expressions changed in the final 10 overs of that game in the field. Anyway, the Surrey Overlights made 199 for 4 in Hawley Strollers' opener, and Strollers won that by 3 wickets, and Guy Derham and Richard Waddington made 103 for the first wicket. Jordan Robbins got 50. Hawley rolled Morden over, 84 for 2 in reply to Morden's 81, game over in 42 overs. And last Saturday they played South Nutfield, local derby. South Nutfield have been back in touch, Tim, which is good.
Yes, they have. Hopefully we'll be able to have somebody on from South Nutfield later in the season.
So I hadn't realised that Chris Walker had taken a step back at South Nutfield, and obviously that's where the communication broke down. Anyway, Hawley 200 for 6, and Mahad Ahmed, who's 18, made 57, and Ben Renfrew, who's 16, made 37, and 87 for Hawley's first wicket. And that was a win against South Nutfield, 1-6-3-4-7. And Katie Field tells us that the juniors are busy training already Fridays. Under-8s, under-9s and under-10s, that school year's 3-5 at 5:30, and under-11s to under-16s at 6:30. If we've got time, Andy, I'd like to have a little look at school cricket later on.
Since
the three of us were involved, granted at independent school stage, but a long time ago. Hawley have also been very kind, Tim, and put a website link to on the front foot.
That's right, they have, yes. That's very good. I mean, Trevor, as you said earlier, Trevor Stevens has been in several times over the last 3 or 4 years that we've been doing the show, and they've put a little link up there, which is helpful for us, and, you know, good advertising. So.
And John Colcutt at Newdigate has done the same, and he's added a little plug to that. Have you got the what he said there in front?
Let's have a look. I'll see if I can find it amongst I've got it here. Yeah, he goes, okay. says Susie Radio are great supporters of the club. Hear the latest on the Front Foot broadcast. Go to 10 minutes at the following link to hear what they said about us. I mean, and we had a little chat, didn't we, about Newdigate,
and that means that John's actually listened to the broadcast as well. 10 minutes in, he's got a letter in this month's edition.
Yes,
of the
he has
very much about the same dropout phenomenon at 14. Yeah. He's been talking to us about, and also the fact that T20, Andy, is not suited to all young players.
No.
Because young players who can't hit it off the square, well, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's something we can maybe chat with Matt Camp, because they're launching a schools T20 tournament as well this year.
We'll look forward to that after 8 o'clock. Square restored at Bletchingley's Grange Meadow, Andy. That's been dormant for a long time.
I was going to say, that's been a long time out of use.
Now, 10 years before your time at the grammar school, Phil Tidy and his dad played at Bletchingley rather than at South Godston. Anyway, Square's been restored. This is funding from the Village Fair Committee. They've decided the A25 is too close to the boundary for modern big bats. So there won't be any men's cricket, but the ECB and Surrey hoping it can be used for women's cricket and junior cricket, one day competition later in the summer, and schools use midweek.
I don't think I've played at Bletchingley. Is it quite a small ground then?
Yes, it is, and the end, I forget what the pub is called now, it's had so many names over the years, but the end opposite the pub on the main road as you start climbing up into the village coming from Godston is a bit handy to the A25.
Yeah, because it's similar, because the same at Headley, isn't it, along that road, and they put up They put
the big nets up, yeah.
But the amount of times that batsmen clear that and hit cars and all sorts on horses and everything else going along Headley, it's, I know it's pretty bad up there. So.
I remember Adam Gilchrist trying to hit the clock in the World Cup 10 or 15 years ago to win a car or $10,000 or whatever it was. Strikes me that at Grange Meadow at Bletchingley, you could have a prize for taking the speed camera out.
Well, I think a lot of people would like that.
maybe I shouldn't say that. Let's go back to Newdigate, actually. They've got a new South African overseas, Tyler Ridder, batsman, off-spinner. Graham Capel, who, again, we know from the grammar school years ago. Mm. His son, Simon, runs the sports injuries clinic in Woodhatch. Serious injuries of tendons in his left hand, and surgery has returned the movement, but he's out of action. Club lost Roger McKinnon of Sturtwood Farm.
I used to play with Roger McKinnon and his son at Charlwood. His son's Dave McKinnon. They're good, both really good fun to play with.
You must have, well, I know you've been to Newdigate.
Oh, we play Newdigate every year. I mean, as I say, the last 3 or 4 years, when they've only recently started having overseas pro, it's been the overseas pro that's won the game for them. But yeah, talking about green clubhouses, I mean, pavilions,
fantastic.
They've done a great amount of work there.
And as Tim's already indicated, John Coldcut has been a great friend to this show. We're good mates, and John was one of those guys years back, Andy, who didn't grind any axes.
No.
If selection didn't work out at the grammar school or whatever, John was happy to say, "You're running the side, you get on with it." Unlike some.
I'll say nothing, David.
Now, good start on the field. Matt Clark made 101 for Newdigate, and history was made. First ever female duo of opening bowlers.
Wow.
Fiona Keel and Jackie Ann Goldsmith neither took a wicket. Fiona's dad, Ian, on the other hand, took 5 for 31.
There you go.
Just to rub it in, but that's Newdigate. And our club of the year last year was Outwood. Novel Curtain Raiser, the Twos, had Graveney down, and they played 2 separate 2020 matches so that they could mix the orders up in each game, which, on the face of it, is not a bad idea. That's accommodating the old to the new, really, isn't it?
We've done something similar with the Mogs on a couple of occasions where we played a 2020 test match.
Yeah.
So you side batting first plate, it has 20 overs, then then you bowl for 20, then you bat for 20, and it's interesting.
Good idea, that, yeah.
And you reverse the order.
Yeah. Yeah,
very good.
They won both anyway, and Lye now have joined this Surrey Village Cricket League, which plays on Sundays.
Yeah, that must be that. This is the first season of that, isn't it?
That's a brand second new season, possibly. I think it's alongside the Surrey Development League, which is the Reigate Priory 6 18-year-olds and 5 season pros. That's established, but this is something separate on a.
So that replaces the Sunday friendlies that they always used to have at Lye, presumably.
Clearly, and whether or not the Saturday friendlies are going ahead, I don't know. Mm. But anyway, that's Lye. And have you got their first ever league result there, Tim?
Yeah, first ever league match in the Sunday Surrey Village Cricket League Div 2, as we said, against Farncombe, who were dismissed for just 36. All the Lye bowlers took wickets, and in their winning 37-1, Mohammed Bassett made 23 and Julian Cox made 13 not out. So, good start.
That's a pretty steamrollering win.
And I actually think as well, I drive past Lye ground every day, and I think they've completed their pavilion.
There's a revamp there.
Yes, exactly.
There?
And I think they mentioned it. Was it who came in last year from Lye? Was it
Kanna Shanmugam?
Yeah, I think Kanna mentioned it last season that there was going to be some work done. But they seem to have. When I've driven past, I've seen the new sign up and the new door.
Good.
So I think they've completed the work there, which is good.
Lots of club news. Bear with me while I just run through a few of the fixtures. Sussex Premiership, Roffia at Brighton and Hove. East Grinstead, who've been in on the show, are at home to Preston Nomads. Horsham home to Eastbourne. Horsham's Will Beer pulling up a few trees for Sussex Firsts in the Royal London the other day. And a slightly neglected leg spinner, I suppose, Andy, because he never broke into into white clothes cricket, red ball cricket.
Yeah. But he's had a good start to the season so far.
Absolutely.
75 he scored, wasn't it, the other day?
Yeah,
good knock there.
So that's good to see. They're home to Eastbourne and Three Bridges in the Premiership at last, and they're home to Middleton, and I don't suppose Three Bridges will have any easy games.
No.
Is that one of the Mogs destinations?
Not currently. I'm not sure. I couldn't say for sure whether we've played there before or not, but No, we don't play them currently.
You've not had a reply for the show from...
I'm going to talk to you about that. I've had a reply from today, so we're going to go back to them and try and schedule them in the next couple of months.
Oh, that would be really good.
We're going to have somebody in from... I think it will be the chairman... I forget his name. Terrible. I can't remember the chap's
name.
Well, anyway.
Just tending towards Sussex is a very good thing, I think.
So
because
we'll
we
have
do broadcast across Three Bridges.
Yeah, so we'll have somebody in from Three Bridges, which is good.
Well, that's excellent. I don't imagine they'll find it easy, although, of course, Hastings and St Leonard's Priory, one of the biggest clubs in Sussex, will be playing in Division 2 against Burgess Hill. Not this weekend, you know, how are the mighty fallen
again? Yeah, exactly. That's right.
And clubs like Littlehampton, Bexhill are in Division 3. Anyway, nearer to home, Burgess Hill, I'm going very excited on Saturday. I'm going to watch Burgess Hill. Their first game is against Chichester Priory. Now, Chichester Priory Park is a nice place to go, but it's no longer used normally for first team cricket because Chichester Priory have a lease on the pitch at Goodwood House. So I'm going to Goodwood to watch cricket on Saturday. Looking forward to that. Ifield relegated to Division 2 there at St James Montefiore. Crawley Eagles going to Bexhill. Crawley against Three Bridges 2. Felbridge and Sunnyside against Chichester Priory 2. Now then, Fuller's Premier Division. Chalton CMO have Thames Ditton at home. Newdigate Battersea Ironsides, who are always obdurate and quite happy to host Battersea Ironsides, I think, really. Travelling into central London is no longer what it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you try and drive up to those sort of grounds on a Saturday morning, it'll take you about 2 hours just to get up there. If you're playing sides in Wandsworth or Streatham or say Battersea, not the easiest places to get to.
Not at all.
So Lingfield travel to Wandgas. Never mind. Division 1 of the Fullers, Hawley away to Southern Rail, Kenley and Selsdon. Three clubs amalgamated there now. And very quickly in the Surrey Downs Division 1, Tadworth at home to East Horsley, South Nutfield home to Oakwood Hill. Capel host Salford's 1 and North Holmwood home to Headley Old Freemans. And the Championship, the Premiership in Surrey and the Kent County Village League don't get away for a week. On the 11th, Banstead are hosting Guildford. Reigate Priory travel to Ashford, which isn't an easy game
any longer.
Good side.
No, you're a very good team.
And Outwood are off to Mepham. And our local side, Merstham, Tim, are at Allen, which as far as I'm aware is Allen Old Boys, as was, who play in Turney Road in Dulwich. You ever been
there?
Yeah, the railway arches?
I've
played there. Nice ground, actually. And Old Alanians, which is Dulwich College Old Boys, they play up Dulwich Common, don't they? Up towards the Grove Tavern on Lordship Lane. Well, that's the local prospects for the weekend, just as it starts raining outside. Any other thoughts about what's occurring locally? I mean, we'll talk about the T20 to Matt later on.
Yeah, we'll have a chat with Matt about the T20. I think he's got a record amount of teams in it this year. But I don't suppose Mogadore Wanderers not in the Surrey Slam at all, are you?
No, we're too. I think we're a bit too long in the tooth to do anything like that. We're very much focused on friendly Sunday cricket, and Lye have gone into the league.
Interesting that Lye have done that after all these years.
I know, and we struggled to get we are playing them this year, but it was a bit tricky, I think, for Will Cooper, our fixture secretary, to actually nail down a date when...
As a friendly.
So I think, we're finding that a lot of clubs on Sundays, the only way that they can generate that interest is to play some sort of league cricket. So I think we're going to...
Yeah, it's a shame though, isn't it, really?
It is a shame.
Because Sunday cricket for me has always been sort of friendly cricket. If you want to play league cricket, then you play on Saturday.
Exactly, you play on a Saturday. And I think, you know, the Mogs ethos is very much, you know, you play to win, but you play to have fun first and foremost. And everyone gets a game because you're giving up 6-7 hours of your day. So everyone should get either a chance to bat a bowl. And as long as you have a beer with the Oppo afterwards, then.
Well, I used to play at Charlwood before they folded. We used to play Mogadore Wanderers. And it was always good fun. And always good teams, you know.
And that's what you want to do. Because people are giving up their time on a Sunday. You want it to make it enjoyable. And you want to bring, like we mentioned earlier, bring the kids in.
Yeah.
Show them what cricket's all about.
But as you say, I guess at Lye they felt that it was in order to try and generate more interest from some of the players, perhaps want that extra bit of competitiveness which that particular league would bring, I guess. But
yeah, and I think the Sunday team in Lye has changed a lot over the years, and you know, it's different personnel and they wanted different things, which is fine, and we don't begrudge them that one bit.
No,
it just seems to me that the emphasis on competitive and win-lose costs us that one thing. I know we've said this umpteen times now, but to me, the art of taking 10 wickets in, let's face it, an afternoon game will be 45 overs if you're lucky in the first innings and 40 in the second, and that's if the spinners bowl. But, you know, to try and bowl a side out, particularly in these days when compared with the pitches I played on when I was 18, 19, 40 years ago, 40, 50 years ago nearly, then, you know, anybody who knows which end of the bat to hold can stick it out for a draw. But then, of course, the art is to try and win the game from that position.
Yeah.
And I think there's a great deal to be said for the honourable draw.
Well, some of the best games, I'm sure you've played in, Andy, and you have as well, David, are those games where one of the teams, either your team or the other team, is there for a draw. The last two men are in.
Oh.
You're either trying to get them out and you're all crowded round the bat, or you're in there and trying to defend. And when you see the last pair bat out 20-odd overs, they're some of the best games.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, I've played in many a game where, you know, either you are under the cosh, but the last, you know, 10 and 11 have batted out 15, 20 overs to save you the game.
That's brilliant.
Or alternate, you know, on the flip side, you know, you've got 10 and 11 in, but they bat through to win you the game. David's right. I think the art of taking 10 wickets sometimes is overlooked, and I think it's very
well. That's
it's a skill you need to learn.
Yeah.
It's a skill that.
But the problem is with limited overs now, and the leagues going to limited overs, there's less, especially youngsters coming through, will never really have got. Had that experience, unless they've played in Sunday sides, of being able to without actually having to take 10 wickets in a match.
No, there's no need to take 10 wickets if you're playing limited overs.
No, exactly.
You just need to stop the boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's turn to the schools just for a moment. I'd like to touch on the schools and on the umpires before we draw breath and move on to the pro side of the game. And I do want to have a little look at the counties, because we're always going to look at the counties, Tim, and we never quite get round to pressure of time. So we really should do that. With the Royal London and everything else. And there's actually going to be some championship cricket in midsummer this year alongside the alongside the World Cup, which is a good thing, I think. A quick word for the umpires in a moment, because they are important, and of course there have been tweaks to the laws again, which I haven't bothered to write down because it just becomes so arcane as to be almost unenforceable, I would have thought. But Douglas Henderson, who has done the schools cricket, which is to say the independent schools cricket effectively, in the Wisden Almanac for a long time. He's about a contemporary of mine, and he was master in charge at Clifton College in Bristol, I think, about the same time as I would have been looking after the grammar school. And he has just pulled no punches this time in his introduction to the Wisden Schools cricket, and I'd like to read it to you, and then a little bit of comment. After the hottest and driest summer since 1976, he says, it was hard to recall a wet start. Matches called off days in advance. First two rounds of the National Schools T20 ravaged, might have turned into a glorious summer for schools had not the pressure of exams grown unbearable. The impression was, though schools understandably pushed their pupils to work hard, it was parents who drove the agenda. At one school, a senior teacher refused to let his son play or even practice for the first 11 during his GCSEs. Elsewhere, a cricket master asked whether parents were cross at paying vast sums for a summer term which barely existed, said complaints only ever arose when he insisted pupils play matches. Many schools reporting almost impossible to field their best 11. This surely is madness, though whether anybody is prepared to stop it is unclear. Chairman of the Headmasters Conference School Sports Committee added, it's a real crisis. Many cricketing schools in the north are now only playing T20, 35 overs if they're lucky, even on Saturdays. The all-day game declaration or 50 overs is seriously threatened by pressure from parents and increasingly from pupils themselves to play shorter games because of their busy social lives and their belief that they cannot spare time from their academic studies and exam preparation. They seem to want to reduce cricket to a game of tiddlywinks.
Well, that's what we were just saying, wasn't it, about the fact that people, you know, everything's shortened down. I just find it incredible that that anybody, when they're studying or when their children are studying, wouldn't want them just to go outside, have a bit of a break, have some fresh air, a bit of exercise, stimulate the brain a bit more, rather than just sitting indoors. And you know, what's the alternative? They end up playing on PlayStations and Xboxes and whatever. Sounds old-fashioned, but I just don't understand why parents wouldn't want that, to be honest. I mean, my kids have always tried to encourage them when, you know, that you can study, but you have to have breaks, you have to carry on exercising, go out, play sport.
Yep.
You know, it just baffling.
The end of my time, and let's be honest, I mean, this is 20 years ago now, towards the end of my time running the first 11 at the grammar school, the pressures just grew and grew and grew. And I don't think that unless you have, I mean, we were talking about David Haywood at City Freeman's the other day, Tim, who played not seconds, I think, as an off-spinner.
Yes,
and his son was an off-spinner as well, who played for...
And they're also involved now with Headley Old Freeman's.
Yeah.
So,
So, unless you've got a guy like David Haywood who really understood what you've just articulated, very, very difficult. I mean,
David Haywood was brilliant. He knew, he got it exactly right at Freeman's. He knew exactly what sport was about. It wasn't about winning, it was about competing, or not but being involved and getting the kids involved, and he knew the balance between studying and sport.
But let's also be fair that unless you are involved with cricket, as a parent you're unlikely to understand what it entails, Andy, apart from 10:30 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night.
I still go back to obviously my time at the grammar school, David, and I remember with great fondness the Saturdays playing cricket, and turning up, and the school's saying that parents are worried about education. I think people have got to realise that playing sport is also an education, and it's not just whether you can do your maths and your physics or your chemistry, it's how you can interact as part of a team, and there are such great lessons that children can learn by playing sport that I think that sometimes is overlooked. And I think, if only schools would grasp that and put as much onus on what children can learn from actually playing sport.
Well,
because that's
huge. I think that's the critical point, is that schools have to almost take a bit of a stand, because let's be honest, everything is so competitive now, for kids. There seems to be so much more pressure on them. I mean, when I was at school and when you were at school, we worked hard, but I don't remember there being as much pressure on me as there is now on my kids. And I think unless lots of parents, if they don't understand that, and as David said, if they're not involved in cricket or whatever, then they wouldn't understand that. But it's for them to go out and play cricket or whatever the sport, it doesn't have to necessarily need to be cricket, but some sort of sport which gets them out and have a break and try and actually get the whole team thing going.
Your experience, of course, may have something to do with the fact that your head of sixth form was also in charge of the first 11 cricket.
Well, exactly. But that's right. So we were fortunate in that respect. However, schools need to understand that it does need to be pursued. They do need to make sure that there is time for this and almost push parents to say, look, this is going to happen.
I mean, I sort of hark back. My brother, my nephew goes to St Bede's, and my brother's getting quite involved in coaching of hockey and of rugby at St Bede's. Now, historically, they weren't strong in rugby. They weren't a rugby school. And my brother's taken, and he's gone and offered free of charge coaching to help and try and get interest in the kids to play these sports. And that's what that's what it needs as well from the parents, to actually help the schools
Buy into the whole thing, don't they?
They do. Yeah. They do. I mean, you're right, David. If the parent has no idea of cricket, then for their child to go away for 7 hours on a Saturday when it's leading up to GCSEs, it can be. You might question it, but I still believe there's so much to be offered and to be learned by.
As usual, I've got to go in three directions. This normally happens, but let's go to Tim first and say you've only got to look. I know it's a long time ago again. Your great friend and my former A-level pupil, Tim Bonges, you've only got to look at what Tim achieved at Glyn School at Yule with bringing the cricket up to scratch there, purely on the back of one man's efforts.
Exactly.
And, Tim played club cricket with us on Sundays as well as with you at Charlwood and all the rest of it, so as there's that. Andy, I think it's not just parents. I got a bit sidetracked. You see, you can't expect members of a teaching staff, unless again they're actually exposed to the the game, to know. And I mean, I had many years ago an England under 15 player coming into the squad whose father was a teacher, and exactly as we described earlier on, wouldn't let him have anything to do with the school cricket.
That's terrible.
It's awful, isn't it?
So there's that. And you also, I mean, young teachers especially, when they're under the pressure of senior management expecting results at A-level and GCSE, and they know nothing about it. And my third point, therefore, is how are they going to know anything about it unless the only thing that is restored to prime time Freeview Television is this blooming 100 ball tournament, which we're not going to talk about tonight. But you've got to you've got to be there to understand it. Now, the Cricketer, Tim's a Wisden Cricket Monthly man. I've taken the Cricketer since the year dot, and Simon Hughes in the Cricketer has very clearly delineated the fact that the independent schools, which is what we've been talking about, have still got it pretty good. If there's a will, there's a way. But what the Cricketer magazine's huge article here, which I'm not going to go into, but what the Cricketer magazine has gone for is a blueprint for state schools. And I'd like to read that to you. Teaching of cricket should be made a mandatory part of the national curriculum. Certificates of commendation should be awarded to state secondary schools who champion the game. Keep encouraging girls' cricket in state schools. Greater links to be forged between professional cricketers and state schools. England stars should be contracted to bring that about. Dan's not here tonight. Essex, 40 years ago, were brilliant at sending the Essex players into local village clubs and so on. Don't know about the schools. A chance to shine, to receive Sport England funding again for secondary schools. Reactivate their satellite club initiative in after-school coaching. The new Sky BBC deal sees some 100 games and international highlights for men and women on the BBC with all its platforms. Press the ECB to ensure live cricket remains on terrestrial beyond these dates. Douglas Henderson's big thing, which I didn't mention earlier, I've been saying this for 40, nearly 50 years, as has he. Schools to change their calendar to January to December, allowing a cricket resurgence with examinations in November.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? That once things start to get going, the exam season's on the school, and then school finishes, and that's that. So, you know, you're into sort of July, and the school's cricket finishes when the season's only really just for clubs is getting going.
And a phenomenon that never existed in our time, the fact that the minute the last exam's over, they're all off to Magaluf or Ibiza or wherever.
Well, that's true as well.
And cricket comes nowhere that scale. Yeah. Independent schools to do more to help state schools, subsidise pitches to clubs. The Grammar School, in fairness, does that. And Adrian Gale at St John's is very good with his T20 competition for the local state schools over there. Monitor and support with a critical eye the ECB's Inspiring Generations campaign. Create a national schools championship for state schools only, 100 or T20. And this can be a difficult one from my own experience. Point 11 and final, clubs to work even more closely with schools and share resources.
That can be a bit tricky, but yeah, it should happen. I mean, I remember being at school and we played for Reigate Priory. Yeah. Reigate Priory Colts was pretty much Reigate Grammar School, but by one or two other players.
And it was the same for me when I was playing at Merstham Cricket Club.
Yeah.
You know, we had pretty much the majority of the Colts were from the grammar school.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, I think it's
But I think the point, the crucial point is the point you've both made earlier on, is the fact that for this all to work, it requires somebody, you mentioned your brother, it requires somebody to be in there who will passionately push forward some sort of, well, call it an agenda or programme that will allow all these things to happen.
Yeah.
You know, you said it yourself, David, you know, obviously you were in charge of cricket at the grammar school all those years ago. We spoke about David Hayward at Freeman's. Bill Dayton was in charge of sport at Freeman's. He was brilliant. You need those type of masters in charge, or other people, parents, friends, whoever it is, to get it. It's all well and good having these plans, but somebody has to passionately push it. Same reason that the Surrey Slam has done well, because Matt Camp took hold of it and passionately pushed it, and you need somebody there to do that, and that's where often it will fall down.
I think the trouble is, though, Andy, that in the real world, the figures that Tim has just I mean, I'm flattered to be named alongside David Hayward, but let's leave that one where it is. Quite honestly, Andy, I mean, aren't they part of John Major's old maids cycling off for a pint of warm beer at the village pub? It's a bygone age, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I'd hate to say that it is, because I think, you know, it's cricket is such a crucial part of British heritage, isn't it? I mean, you look at the sports that we've sent around the world. I mean, football, rugby, cricket. I mean, cricket is such a crucial sport. I mean, it's a worldwide sport. And kids, and what you mentioned there on that report, I mean, having girls play cricket in secondary schools, I think, I mean, my daughter loves cricket, but she can't play it at school. So she has to go to a club. I think, you know, if schools would, yeah, would do that. But no, I hope it's not a bygone era, David. I really do, because I think it's such a crucial part of growing up, of school life.
Yeah.
On the club front, it looks as if Hawley, for one, are succeeding in overcoming John Colcutt's duty gate hurdle and keeping the 16, 17, 18-year-olds playing, even if it is in their adult
teams. That's always critical, isn't it? So trying to keep them. Also, you know, when they go away to university, trying to get them back, isn't it?
So. Sussex, of course, I think we said this to Trevor last month, Sussex, of course, also have the Sussex Junior Cricket Federation under 16 tournament in the last week of August, and that's a really big thing in Sussex.
Is that where's that? Is that played at the county ground, or is that?
Well, no, that's played by the clubs over a period of about 10 days, and they all play four or five games, and then the cream rises to the top. And I think the final may be at Preston Nomads or somewhere can accommodate it. Very quickly then for the umpires, because the clock is marching on us. It's quite extraordinary. But something I picked up. I got my umpires pack. You probably don't know, Andy, contacting Dan Feast, in fact, but I decided, even though I've got no intention of doing any umpiring anymore, that I would renew, principally because at last they've seen sense, and once you register online the first time, you can do your own renewal of your DBS, which makes such a tremendous difference, all that cumbersome paperwork. So I got my pack as usual, and it strikes me, I'm not going to go into any details here, but what do you think the special leaflet for umpires, all the little cards obviously about how many overs they can bowl and what to do, the conditions of the pitch and light and all the rest of it, what do you think was highlighted this time by ECB Science and Medicine? There's a clue for you.
Science and Medicine?
ECB Science and Medicine.
Well, I think I know what it is.
You do?
Yes, but only because you pointed it out to me earlier on. So
I'm on the spot then.
You're
aren't
on
I?
The spot now. Aren't
science
you? Yeah.
And medicine.
Andy, it's a concussion fact sheet for umpires. And I won't go into details. What is a concussion? What should you do if you think your player has concussion? Signs and symptoms. And your cause for concern, this is the instruction to umpires, should override the laws, irrespective of whether this prevents runs being scored or a wicket being taken. Calling and signalling dead ball immediately is the right thing to do.
Well, I mean, I think that's the way it's going in all sport, isn't it? It's the same in sports like football now, where someone has a head injury, they have to stop play and so on and so forth. I guess it's the way it is now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's very wise. Way to go. I think, you know, it's not just being hit by the ball. You can hit, you know, the ground's hard in the summer. If you're diving to make a stop, you can quite easily hit your head and get some concussion. I think it's sensible. It'll be interesting to see how that's interpreted.
Well, we've covered about 35 minutes already, which is extraordinary, and a couple of issues arising out of the local clubs, and I think in future shows we'll be able to concentrate on any local clubs who've actually pulled any trees up in a given month or a given week, and we hope, Andy, that you'll keep us posted what the Mogs are up to.
Definitely.
Welcome back to part two of May's edition of On the Front Foot. Tim Bowling, Andy Tharp and myself, David Jay here. And we are going to turn our attentions now to the counties and the championship and the Royal London Cup. And if we've got time, just a moment or two on the IPL. Well, gentlemen, we've had early rounds of county championship, and fortunately the weather was kind at that very early start to the season. We've got a smaller seam on the Duke's ball. The heavy roller is allowed again, and so there's been at least one match where 590 played 750. Yeah. So lots of runs doing the rounds, and very contrasting fortunes for Surrey, last year's champions, holding their heads up, although not going as well in the championship, and down the tubes in the Royal London, including today.
Yeah, they've had a... Well, we were talking about this before we came on air, that they've had a bit of a shocker, really. Surrey were playing Kent today, and Kent have beaten them by 8 wickets. Surrey were all out for 127 off just 35.2 overs, and Kent 131 for 2 off 28 overs. So, convincing win for Kent, and Surrey have really been pretty appalling in the Royal London Cup. I think they've won once this season in the Royal London. They're, well, before this particular game, they were second from bottom. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong table. They are. I'm looking at the County Championship, but let's have another look. Royal London, right, here we go. Yeah, second from bottom, six matches, one victory. Kent are the only team beneath them, and Kent have beaten them. So, Surrey have had a real, real poor form in this particular Royal London Cup this year, which is quite bizarre. I know you mentioned earlier, Andy, before we were on air, about the fact that they were sort of blooding youngsters in this particular tournament.
I think, well, I think just looking from the sides they've been putting out, I think, you know, they've missed Jason Roy. I think, you know, he started in the Royal London Cup and then had a back spasm, and obviously he's now playing for England. You know, Ben Foulkes has been called up by England. Morning Morkel seemed to be rested for a couple of games, and they had tried to, you know, bring some of these youngsters in, like Conor McCurr and this young guy called Clark, who I'd never heard of before. But I think just the way that the season is set this year, with, you know, the Royal London Cup just basically happening in May, April and May, I think they looked at it and said, right, well, we need to get some youngsters some experience. I think if, well, as soon as they realised that they were going to struggle to qualify, I think it's, I think that's what they've done.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame. I mean, I think it, you worry because, you know, winning is a habit, but also losing is a habit. And you've got to think, well, when they start playing Championship cricket again, are they going to be able to turn that switch and be as powerful as they were last year?
Especially as they've got big ambitions to be this sort of global club. And is it Richard Gould is the chief executive, isn't it? He's said many things about how he's looking to try and emulate Premier League football clubs and wants to bring the youngsters through and all this. And then they have a performance like this in the Royal London Tournament.
Yeah, well, at least they scored 100 today. I mean, they got bowled out for under 100 2 days ago, didn't they? I think we can judge a bit too early sometimes. It's an interesting competition. I just think Surrey I think they just resigned themselves to not doing very well this year.
Don't you think that without Jason Roy, they are significantly weakened in one day cricket, in white ball cricket? And the name you haven't mentioned is that, of course, Ollie Pope has suffered the same shoulder dislocation as Sam Billings and is going to be out for most of the season.
Yeah,
and you've got to take both Currans out of the equation
indeed,
as well.
Because they're in the IPL.
Just looking at the beginning of the Championship, Ryan Patel's 21, Will Jacks is 20, and they shared a fifth wicket partnership of 151 on the opening day. Well, that's got to be very good news. And Patel's century was made over more than 6 hours and nearly 300 deliveries.
He batted really well.
Going off at a tangent, it's good, isn't it, to see that finally Haseeb Hameed has scored a double 100 against one of the universities and then 100 in the Championship at Lancashire. To me, I've said this to Tim on the last show, Andy, I hope to goodness that Sam Curran is not going to be a rocket that flares and then falls to earth. And there are one or two of these youngsters who, it's so difficult, isn't it? Is it possible to over-promote and encouraging them into the test set-up and then they fail and after that they struggle to get back into their county side?
Well, I think we're a long way from the likes of Mark Lathwell, who I remember, who was brought into the England team to play in the Ashes and played three or four tests and then was just jettisoned. I think Sam Curran's actually proved. I mean, I was a bit concerned when he got picked, thinking, has he got enough experience? But the way that he performed against India, especially last year, was amazing. And I think he took everyone's sort of breath away in the maturity and the way that he bowled and especially the way he batted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a risk that that he could become a rocket, like you say, David, a shooting star that flies up very, very quickly and then doesn't do anything. But I'd like to think that with the team he's got around him at Surrey, within the England setup, that he's got a good career ahead of him.
I tell you another name we haven't mentioned with this run of defeats that Surrey have suffered in the Royal London is Ricky Clark.
Yeah.
Maybe greying around the temples, but is a very useful bits and pieces one day player. Oh. And apparently he absolutely mangled his finger.
Yeah, I saw a picture of it today. And he dislocated the first part of his finger, so he was trying to scoop a catch. and obviously it just, I don't know how long he's going to be out for, but
I'll have to take him out of my fantasy cricket team.
Well, Surrey are certainly struggling with these injuries at the moment, as you say, with Pope and Ricky Clark, etc. And it's you know, they talk about the academy and they talk about this fact they're trying to bring players through and stuff. So, you know, with the fact that there's a few injuries there, there's a few players getting called up to the England team, there is chances for these youngsters to come through, but, you know, it's just trying to actually start performing. Mm,
yeah. And after our urgings, Rory Burns will be called up for the test side in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
So yes, not perhaps as straightforward for Surrey this year. Let's hope they don't do a Lancashire and disappear to the bottom end of the championship.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see when they go back to that championship, yeah, how they perform, whether it's just a glitch, whether they're you know, as you said, Andy, once you start losing, it can become a habit, and will they be able to sort of get over that? We'll see. I mean, they've only played, I think, one championship match so far anyway. We'll see what happens when they get back into that particular tournament. So
Sussex, on the other hand, flying fairly high. Yeah. I don't know if one of you's got access to the Hampshire-Sussex result today from the Royal London.
Yes, Hampshire won by 9 runs in that particular game today.
Defending 350-odd.
Yeah, that's right. Hampshire 355 for 5 off their 50. Sussex all out 346 with 3 balls to go. So very, very close in that particular match. But Hampshire just sneaked by by 9 runs.
That's a brave chase, isn't it? And, of course, they did... Essex in a similar chase the other day. Essex 283 for 7, Sussex 287 for 9, and our former compadre Will Beer made his highest score in the Royal London with 75. I like Hove.
Yes, I've played there once.
Have you?
Yeah, I played there in a six-a-side tournament about 10 years ago. For my company put a team in for Keith Greenfield's testimonial.
Okay.
And we pitched up, 6 of us. Probably there was probably only 2 proper proper players that actually play regularly turned up, and we thought it was going to be a friendly tournament. Didn't realise it was going to be teams from comprised of sort of first 11 in Sussex, and there was the Sussex under 19 academy side there, and not surprisingly we didn't win a single game. Oh. But we had a very good afternoon. They split the ground in half, so they had 2 groups, and each game played in each half of the ground. And then the final was played on the full ground. We were long gone by then. We were in the bar. Yeah, watching it. But lovely ground to play on. I mean, it's been redeveloped a little bit since I played there, but it's nice down in Hove.
Let's pick this up, if we may, as and when, with Matt vis-a-vis the England stuff and all the rest of it. We haven't even touched upon the IPL. Now, very quickly, let's just think over this. Just a little bit more about Sussex, because in spite of losing narrowly today, they're doing really well in the Royal London. They should qualify.
Yes, they have done much better than Surrey, haven't they? They, at the moment, I think before tonight's match, they were sitting 3rd in the group. So hopefully they'll go into the final stages of that tournament.
Well, let's hope so. And interestingly, listening to Rob Andrew on one of the Sky broadcasts, he is keen that the further redevelopment of Hove should turn towards women's and junior cricket. Mm. He actually said on air, "We've got more than enough test grounds as it is."
Yeah, exactly.
So,
heard that interview. It was very good.
As chief executive, I thought the KSL finals day for the women worked absolutely superbly there last August Bank Holiday Monday, and you know my views about that disappearing down the tubes with the 100. Anyway, we're coming up to news time, so we'll resume after the news, gentlemen. Welcome back. My name's David J. Tim Bowling is the other side of the panel as my co-host. And having enjoyed an extremely leisurely chat, as if round the pub table, with our guest pundit Andy Tharp in the first hour of the show, time for us now to welcome to Susie 103.4 Matt Camp. Good evening to Matt. We'll come back to the professional game and the World Cup and perhaps prospects for the Ashes. We'll see how we go. Just a word about the IPL in the final 20 minutes or so of the show. But now it's an absolute pleasure to welcome back to the On the Front Foot studio, Matt Camp of the Surrey Slam. Matt, hello and how are you?
Hello, I'm good. Thanks for having me back.
That's good. It's excellent to see you here. And so much has happened. I know you came in and you were very happy and satisfied with the way things had gone when we saw you at the end of last season, but can you tell us anything about what's gone on in the winter? Any further reflections on what went well and what didn't go well? And then I know Tim has got lots of quizzing for you as to what's about to happen.
Well, as always, it seems to be busier for me in the winter than it is in the summer. So yeah, plenty of work expanding the competition to what is now four separate competitions in Surrey, but then also undertaking work that would hopefully see the slams in neighbouring counties for the year 2020.
I think since we last met, you've had a rather large article in the Wisden Cricket Monthly, haven't you?
And thanks to Mr. Gurney for promoting it. Yeah, it kind of took off.
It was about a 4-page spread, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we had Richard there at the Wisden just asked for an interview. We had some good coverage on the slam over the course of the summer, and just wanted to see how it had materialised, what had gone well, and all that sort of stuff. So I had a good chat with him. He wrote up a fantastic article, which was the fact it was in Wisden was fantastic. And then a couple of people in who have got a decent number of followers on social media decided to tag it and add their point to it, and before you know it, it's
viral, as they say.
So
it mentions in there, I mean, obviously the title of the actual article was "Should Other Counties Adopt the Surrey Slam Model?" So you're obviously being used as a sort of prototype for how cricket can be promoted at club level throughout the country, which you must feel great about, considering, you know, when you took this thing over all those years ago, it's not that many years ago, is it really? A couple of years ago, and it's grown now that you're being used as the model.
Well, yeah, I think the thing is, it's an encompassing thing. It's not just the game, the T20 model of the game itself. It's all the bits and pieces surrounding it. And you know, of course, it's pleasing. I never envisaged this a million years. When I stuck my hand up at that AGM however long ago, and I certainly didn't envisage it 12 months ago. But yeah, it's great. And the most important thing is that people are talking about how can we arrest the slide in participation in cricket. That's the most important thing.
And you mentioned earlier, or just now, and it's in the article as well, that there's going to be four different tournaments this year, aren't there? Do you want to give us a rundown of the four different tournaments you're going to be running?
Yeah, so you've got the flagship tournament, if you like, which is the midweek, and that's grown a bit of it's interesting that. So although it was 64 teams last year and it's 72 this year, so you might say that's not much growth, but the reason for that is we also launched a Sunday competition, which a couple of sides have felt that will suit them better than the midweek, so they've sort of transferred over to there. That's going to be 18 teams this year. Working with Surrey and actually being part of the formal Surrey women's structure, there'll be a women's competition, which is 13 teams. That's really pleasing. I'm really excited about that. And then we've got the schools element as well. It'd be disingenuous of me to take much credit for that. That is something that Darren Talbot, who was on this show he's responsible for that. And that's not anything new, it's just a rebranding under the Surrey Slam, purely because it then kind of gives an easy pathway for guys who are playing that competition. It kind of has that association with the adult game in the hope that, you know, they might see that, and then once they finish their school element, will want to play the senior version of it.
And it mentioned in the article about the Surrey Slam Schools competition, you mentioned Darren Talbot's involved. Borough State School Academy sides, and I was slightly confused. Will it be teams in each school playing each other, or are they schools sort of merged together and playing?
No,
as teams?
So it's state school only.
Right.
And what it is any kids of certain ages are able to go to these sort of training sessions, and a side is picked to represent the borough.
Right, okay.
So these 12 boroughs, which will be selected from state schools, will compete against each other.
Okay, fine. Okay, well, that's fantastic that you've got these four tournaments going. It was interesting that you mentioned in the article with regard to the Sunday competition that you were slightly conscious. You said, I'm conscious that we could get anger from some people with regard to availability and how that impacts on other availability in clubs. Is that something that you think will be an issue, or is...
I'm very conscious of it, because with the midweek, people can play midweek and it doesn't trample on the weekend cricket, right? And so it's kind of viewed as an add-on, and it's not really doing any harm to existing leagues or anything like that. The thing with the Sunday, and it's only come about because a number of clubs were asking for it, was that there's every possibility here. We're dealing now with people can't play two. We're very unlikely to play 2 days in a weekend. So now all of a sudden, if there's a weekend option where they can play a 2.5 hour game, there is the potential that they might pick that instead of playing for the second or third 11 on a Saturday. So I'm very nervous, isn't the right word, but I'm conscious. I'm very conscious of the fact and sensitive to the fact that this has the potential to stir things up a little bit.
Well, yeah, as you say, the fact that you're conscious of it means that you can actually do something about it. When we spoke to you in the past, the whole concept of the Surrey Slam is designed to try and get people involved in cricket, not reduce availability in other games, and the fact, as I say, the fact that it's been used as a model across other, potentially for other counties. You talked about the fact that you were hoping to launch in other counties. Which areas are you allowed to say? Which areas you're looking at potentially expanding into?
It'll be Sussex and Essex.
Sussex and Essex. Okay. Yeah. And will you run it as much as you do the Surrey side, or will you be more of a sort of consultant for other people to run it in those counties?
No, I mean, whilst there will be some assistance from Essex and Sussex, the idea is that it will be run I say by me, but there's only a certain amount of time that I have available to that's the idea. So it'll be a very similar model. Each county wants slightly different things from it in terms of what their overall goals are, because each county has different challenges, and that's fine, but it's interesting to see how it's going to develop. We've very much taken the view that we need to do that groundwork in the summer, because liaising with clubs in the winter is a tad difficult, with a degree of hibernation.
And you highlighted our club of the year last year, Outwood, in the article, didn't you, as being the sort of prime example of a team that's really got hold of the Surrey Slam idea and promoted it and made the most of it.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's, don't get me wrong, there's big clubs and they have a big... resource pool to draw upon in terms of manning bars and all that sort of stuff, and that's great, although it should never be taken for granted. But Outwood, by their own admission, wouldn't say they're a big club, but if you go down and watch one of their Surrey Slam games, you can't believe the number of people that are there, and they embrace they put on the razzmatazz element of it, and it all sounds, maybe it's a little bit hokey when it's only a village club, surely it's all a bit of a joke, but actually they do it very well. The music is properly coming out, it's not coming out of some pokey little speaker around the corner, and there's a barbecue going and the bar is manned, and there's
it's about 80
to 100 people there, which is astounding for the size of the club.
Well, I don't think I've ever played in front of more than about 10 people.
the setting absolutely lends itself as well, doesn't it, Matt? I think Andy, is Outwood on the Mogs list?
It's not, but it feels like it should be from what I've just heard.
I'm quite surprised, actually, because, I mean, we, in the old days, I mean, this guy thinks he's just invented T20. we were playing 20-over staff thrashes in the 1970s, and Outwood was one of our number one destinations. It's a phenomenal place, and as Tim said, they were very deservedly, I think, our club of the year. Matt, I've been told I have to ask you, how is it that we have four pages of A4 all about the Surrey Slam and on the front foot never got a mention?
I know. I happened to be in W.H. Smith's. I happened to be flicking through the magazine, and I sort of thought, I'll have a look, see. Oh, he's bound to mention us. Page one, no. Two, no. Three, no. Not even on page four. Terrible.
Oh, that's embarrassing, isn't it? these things, as they come, you have this idea of all these things you're going to mention on these interviews, isn't it? And even the 2.5 that I've done here
we had a journalist in from the Wisden magazine last year, and he didn't even mention us in the magazine, so don't worry, we'll let you off.
If the opportunity arises again, I'll deal with the problem.
Matt, compared with your oceanic status, we remain a very small fish in a very small pool. I'm thrilled by this expansion in the the southeast. I've not been listening to all of the conversation in the last 10 minutes. I've been shuffling papers, as one has to. The women's competition is clearly something very exciting, in line with women's cricket nationally being professionalised, even though that's going to reduce the number of counties, I think, from something like 38 to 10 or 8 in terms of professionalism. But clearly this is something that's very much on the rise, and I imagine you're similarly excited.
I'm extremely excited by the women's competition. To have 13 teams straight up is really impressive, I think. And the fact that it's actually part of the formal Surrey structure, that's a great thing. So it really is. It's got this opportunity to give women who already play cricket that opportunity to have a more accessible cricket match. But also it's an entry point for people who maybe haven't really picked up a bat before. And the great thing about that is, so we've got, like I said, 13 teams divided into an East group of 7 teams, a West group of 6. And so get my geography right in a minute. East group, you've got, right for this area, you've got Reigate Priory, you've got South Nutfield, you've got Outwood, which is fantastic. And the great thing about, the most exciting thing about that is, so on Bank Holiday Sunday, the August weekend, there'll be a 12-team finals day. So unfortunately, the team that finishes bottom of the East group won't make it. But where you'll have the 6th versus 6th, and you'll have this basically whole day celebration of Surrey women's cricket. And I think I can say, we'll have one, if not two, of the Stars squad come and present the trophy.
Tell me now, if you can, presumably with these additional competitions, the logistics of running finals become infinitely more complicated. How are you going to go about it?
Well, with a lot of support from my family. it wipes out 3 Sundays in a row for me, which is... it's fine, you know, it's a lot of work. It requires a lot of support from certain clubs with the right infrastructure in terms of their grounds. We need at least 2 pitches. But having said that, it's a great opportunity for them to showcase their club.
Absolutely.
And
who's in line to be doing that this year?
So the midweek, the midweek and the women's final will be held at Horsley and Send.
Right.
And the Sunday finals day will be held at Beddington, who hosted the midweek finals last year.
Yep. Okay. And there's 2 pitches at Horsley and Send, are there? It's so long since I've been there. I did a game there, Surrey under 15 game or something, but it's way in the back of my memory. Never played there. Well, that's brilliant. Andy, are you aware that this wonderful organisation not just promotes but makes available the coloured kit and the logos?
I wasn't aware about the kit. No, I mean that's something that makes it, gives it that sort of real good, honest feel to it, though, isn't it? I mean, because that's an expense that a lot of clubs probably couldn't reach to.
Right that Mogador Wanderers have dabbled in coloured clothing?
we had some leisure wear. Yes, and it had maroon, because Mogador Wanderers is a maroon colour, so it was a maroon shirt with just some white sleeves. So yeah, that was through Simon Wickham many moons ago.
Have I not seen a maroon underarm flash on the playing shirts?
Yes, we have on the later shirts. We have a slight maroon colouring on there. I mean, we're a very traditional club. I think the next bit of colour clothing that we're looking at is actually blazers.
I'm all for that. Yeah. You know, 8 years since I retired, and I've hardly worn a jacket and tie since.
I think we have played in our leisure wear once when we were on tour in Menorca.
So you're going to be getting your head together with Matt and organising a wandering side Surrey Slam for 2021.
More than welcome.
Because Matt hasn't got enough on his plate already.
Yeah, exactly. No problem. It'd be interesting trying to find which ground we'll play at.
You don't have to have a home ground. It's not a problem.
I'm sure there are ways and means. Have you got any exciting new names for us, Matt? Any outlandish colours? Any difficult logos? Old Emmanuel Rum Dog Millionaires?
I think that's the brilliant one, isn't it? I see, and it never said. It mentions this in the article about Emmanuel Rum Dog Millionaires, which is absolutely fantastic. But it doesn't mention. You talked about the fact it was really hard to come up with a logo.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mention what the logo was in the article.
I've upgraded it. Actually, okay. There was a few, because the way it all took off last year, there were some logos which, there's a certain amount of time I had, so some didn't quite work.
So did you do them? Did you design them all yourself?
Don't make out I'm drawing them. It's me Google image searching from there. Yeah. Don't be wrong, there's been some doctoring here and there, but it's not me. I'm no graphic designer. but
Yeah, there were some that I, when I look back at the kind of the wallpaper of all the badges, there were just some that stood out to me thinking they're not quite up to scratch. So this winter I took an opportunity to upgrade a couple of them, and the Rum Dog Millionaires was one of them. And so it is a, it's an Alsatian who is kind of sitting back with a cocktail of some sort and is surrounded by some gold coins. It was the best
Very
I could
good.
Do.
I like it. I like it.
Matt, were you designing for Mogador Wanderers? Would some sort of enormous feline be involved?
It would very much depend on what your nickname would be, but well, if I can do Rum Dog Millionaires, I think I can do it.
I was going to say, I think you're well on top of it. If you can get when presumably when that particular application fell through the onto your doormat and you opened it up and you thought, I've got to come up with a logo for that, you must have thought it was going to take a little while to think of something.
Yeah, it did. I mean, when it's kind of there's two elements into it, the dog and the millionaire element. That's when all of a sudden you get that. And off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone else that's done that. They've all been quite.
Because you mentioned also the fact that there's lots of the teams use swans as their sort of nickname.
Yeah, the trouble with the swan is the biggest challenge, because you try and find a bold image of a, it doesn't have to be mean looking, but you know, there's a kind of standard image I try to look at. It needs to be bold. It needs to be, you know, whereas the swan is quite a delicate animal anyway, of course, or delicate bird, sorry. And you know, you kind of want to make it fit with the general brand, and it's a bit challenging, to be honest.
Well, I think it's good that you're actually responsible yourself for doing it. I assumed that you had sort of outsourced it to some graphics company which were doing it for you.
Well, funny you say that, because my plan is, and this time last year I hadn't, which is foolish given that my wife is a teacher, I hadn't actually taken into account the way a syllabus is kind of planned, but my plan is to try and work with a local school that can use it as a project, so a graphic design project, and they will help with that, but I need to have planned it a bit earlier, so that's my ultimate game.
I suppose from doing it for how long have you been doing it now, the Surrey Slam? You took it over in,
well, as it currently is, this is only its second year, but what preceded it, I really kind of took it on in 2012.
Okay, so presumably in the time that you've been involved, and obviously you've run Surrey Slam now for a couple of years, you must have. You know, we've talked about logos, but you must obviously be aware. And you're sitting with, you've got your Surrey Slam top on. It is all about branding, isn't it? And it's all about getting the logos out there, Surrey Slam logos, team logos, and the whole thing is about branding.
The thing about the logos is, so to be brutally honest, when I started it, it was just a bit of fun, right? That's all it was. A bit of a joke, just to kind of, you know, tack into that IPL type thing. But actually, as it's gone on, and funny enough, and this is a bit of a name drop, I do apologise, but I was talking to a guy who's head of youth cricket in Perth, Australia. And we were talking about, he got hold of the Surrey Slam, this is how widespread, and we were talking about the ins and outs, why it's working, all that sort of stuff. And I talked about the badges, which he's obviously seen through various social media platforms, and I said, it's actually, you mustn't underestimate the importance of it, because this needs to be viewed as not just an add-on. It's not just cricket for the guys who play at the weekend. This is a vehicle for getting more people into your club. So it has to have its own identity. And if you have that logo on it, and you see plenty of clubs now using it and actually using it as their avatar on their social media, you can build that momentum around the team. It shouldn't be underestimated.
It is amazing, isn't it, how much branding now in even in sport at club level, how important it is, you know.
I think it was the 90s that became the decade of marketing, and it's never really, the tsunami of marketing has never subsided since. And yes, you're absolutely right, and for goodness sake, we've got to move with the times. However traditionalist we may be under the very thick hide, you've got to supply what the punters want. Simple as that. I promised Andy we're not going to discuss the 100 tonight, but one of the drums I've been banging, Matt, recently is the way in which I think the Kia Super League has been absolutely brilliant. When it was doubled last year for the women, and we'd got the overseas stars here, and they played twice the number of games and built up to that wonderful finals day at Hove, and now they're going to knock it on the head for the 100. Now, is this new format at professional level going to have any sort of influence on the Surrey Slam?
Well, I've always said if it transpires that people would rather play the 100 than traditional T20, then so be it. It's not my decision. I don't run this for what I believe cricket should be. I run it on the basis of what the clubs want, and that's why it's grown. And and if, like I said, we will take that view at some point, and it'll be, as with any change we ever implement with the Surrey Slam, it'll be democratic process. And yeah, if it turns out the majority would rather play this 10 ball over or whatever it is, then that's what it'll be.
I can't see there ever being, I cannot see the 100 overtaking T20 as
you might well be right
format.
But the point is, yeah, I'm not going to dictate
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
it is the 100 going to influence the IPL, Andy? Do you think?
No, is my honest answer. I think the IPL is a law unto itself, isn't it?
And also, it's whatever, again, traditionalists might think about it, it is now an established format,
exactly,
which attracts international superstars.
Indeed, T20 has a place. I mean, I think... you say, I think that this whole 100 is just I have trouble with it, trying to get my head around how it's going to work. But yeah,
I think the interesting thing to me, Matt, was that and let's not forget that it was the UK that invented T20, or at least drew from the old traditions to reinvent T20 as a pro game. And you know, the pros back in 2003 or whenever it was referred to it, Matt, as hit and giggle, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's how it was. But over those early years, and certainly once the IPL came along, it started to be a bit like rugby union and rugby league, and it started to develop its own tactics and its own approaches. The one thing I would say about the IPL, and we might talk about the IPL in a minute anyway, but to me this year, because I've been a bit under the weather, as Tim knows, so I've watched quite a lot of IPL, and I was talking to Jim Grant, another of our pundits, and at pro level, we rather think the IPL has become more formulaic this year than it's ever been before. You could more or less say that's what's going to happen, and it usually does happen. Of course, with your admirable initiative to attract more people into the game, Matt, that's not what the Surrey Slam will ever be about. There'll be teams going hell for leather to win it, no doubt, but it's about involvement, isn't it?
Yeah, and hence the player eligibility rules, which is always going to be the challenge in terms of making sure we try and keep it as level a playing field as possible. Yes, of course, there'll be teams that'll be more competitive than others, but that shouldn't be to the point where we end up having, you know, 200 plays, 50 all out or whatever.
Yeah, I think and that's important, I think, and that was highlighted in the article in Wisden, the fact that it is a level playing field, or not totally level, but it's made a more level playing field, so that you won't have sides coming in with packing them out with first 11 players and walking away with the tournament, which will, let's be honest, if that were to ever have happened, it would put other teams off. The fact that teams can go in there, a team like Outwood could go in, and I think they lost to Spencer, didn't they, in the final. Spencer, a big club, you know, Outwood, great club, but not in the same size as Spencer, but they competed for the final, says everything about
it. Yeah, and it's not
fact,
like, I wouldn't say it was, having watched that game, obviously, I wouldn't say that was Outwood pulling over and above. It's not like they had four or five people that suddenly hit career bests or anything like that. Mm. They were easily competing. I think they say themselves, on another day, they'd have won that game. And so it was close. And it's, don't get me wrong, it's a massive challenge. It's a difficult admin challenge, and it requires a lot of buy-in from the clubs. But they know, and this has been sold to them again and again and again, that if they abuse that, there's only one way this competition will go, and end up dying.
Yeah.
And if they want to do that, then they won't last very long, I'll ensure it, because the endurance of the competition is paramount.
Yeah.
And with that will come us, I believe, our game having more people playing in the area.
Which has got to be a wonderful thing, way things are going.
I mean, we've said it before when you've been in, Mads, but it's a fantastic tournament, and it's the fact that it's grown so rapidly, you know, it's testament to the work you've done, and testament to the rules that you've put in place, which mean that clubs can look at the tournament and think, we could win this. You know, any team could go into that and think they could win this tournament. It's not like the Surrey Championship where there's the big clubs and, you know, they're always going to be up there. Any side can come into this tournament and win it, and that is what the beauty of it is, and that's why people will continue to want to play in it.
And that's the idea.
Matt, it's been absolutely brilliant of you to come over, and especially at short notice. I know it's a long way for you to come, so we're really grateful. I mean, I think at the outset of the competition is a really good time for you to be here, and I'm sure we'll see you later in the season for some sort of an autumn wash up. Before we move on to matters a bit wider, and I hope you'd stay and join the discussion for the last 20 minutes of the show, is there anything else that you'd like to get on air now about this year's Surrey Slam?
I would say that if you're a player out there thinking, do you know what, I haven't got time to commit to cricket, this is the vehicle for you, and please go on to surreyslam.co.uk where you can find your local team. Even though it's about to start next week, doesn't matter, get involved at any point during the summer. And if you're a team out there that has been thinking, oh, do you know what, you know, we haven't got enough players on a weekend who'd want to do that, I'd encourage you to actually try and invest in this, and we can almost bring you in on a kind of maybe 2 or 3 game trial basis for the summer, just to see if you can actually grow your membership, because that's the idea of it. But we do appreciate some clubs that takes a leap of faith to start with, but the idea is there's no pressure, you know, we work with you to achieve that.
Matt, that's absolutely brilliant. You're with On the Front Foot. This is Susie 103.4 Sussex and Surrey's Susie Radio. Welcome back to the final part of this May edition of On the Front Foot. My name's David Jay. I'm joined by Tim Bowling as co-presenter. Matt Camp's here from the Surrey Slam, and Andy Tharp is our guest pundit from Mogadore Wanderers. Now, thinking back just for a moment to the Royal London, which is where we were, Matt, before you arrived at 8 o'clock, must mention that Roses match. My goodness me, 311 for 9, played 310 all out with one ball left.
Amazing.
Absolutely extraordinary game, and I watched from my couch. I watched Peter Trigo make 140-odd at Taunton, and I still think that both Trigo and Hildreth are very, very unlucky not to have come within touching distance of England honours. I suppose it's to do with the fact that, you know, even Jos Buttler had to move from an unfashionable county to get recognition. I mean, Marcus Truscothick only really got recognition because Duncan Fletcher happened to spot him when he was...
Do you think that's the reason that... Because they're playing for those two... It's a shame, isn't it, if that's the case? Yeah, great shame.
I'm absolutely sure of that. I mean, Big Brother needs to watch out. Billy Root is pulling trees up for Glamorgan.
That's right, he is, yes.
198. So that's the Royal London. Any thoughts about... I mean, Hampshire are obviously steaming away with the southern section, and Notts, which will lead us into the World Cup via the IPL. Notts were the runaway leaders. Trent Bridge is a good place to bat.
Yeah.
Until all of a sudden they got rolled over yesterday, and that has had repercussions at a higher level. Let's put the Royal London on one side, if we may, and just think very briefly. Tim, you can leave the room if you like, about the about the IPL, which as I said, I'm beginning to find a little bit formulaic. On the other hand, Matt, in terms of what you're doing, the IPL has got this beautiful glitz, hasn't it, with the uniforms and the colours and the floodlights and all of those things that Kerry Packer started, really.
Yeah, it does. It stems from a long time ago, actually, and I think we've mentioned before that the branding element is very important. Yes, it almost goes to the nth degree with in the IPL, but it... Yeah, if you want to attract a young audience, they need that visual element. It's all, you know, social media is virtually all visual, really, at the end of the day. If you haven't attached an image or something to your tweet or your post, it doesn't stand out as much, and it all has to be there. It has to be absolutely spot on. And I think we see, you know, our clubs from other sports are tagging more into that now as well.
Yeah, you lost me a little bit round about the word tweet there, but that's the way it goes. When we were talking earlier, it crossed my mind talking about involvement and team sports, you know, no I in team, but more than one in social media. anyway, let's not go there. Andy, the reviled horns and toasting fork mustachioed David Warner dons the orange of Sunrisers Hyderabad and becomes not just a club but a national hero.
It's amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, how he's managed to turn himself around from being probably the most hated man in Australia to actually trying to forge and restart his career. And, you know, you've got to give him credit for that. I mean, he's a phenomenal T20 player, isn't he? And, you know, some of the performances he's put in have been amazing.
It was his first skill, wasn't it? Yeah. He started as a T20 slogger.
Mm. I mean, I don't know if he's been picked for the Australian World Cup squad.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see the reception he gets when he comes over here in the next few weeks. But look, fair credit to him. I mean, he's managed to put a difficult time behind him and try and restart his career.
In the games I've seen, Steve Smith looked a lot less comfortable, far from the top of his game.
I think Smith's much more of an introspective character, isn't he, than Warner. I think Warner backs himself and appears far more confident, therefore able to sort of recover from the period of time that he's been out.
So. And Warner's going to feed off the adulation of those huge crowds, who I suspect are not bothered as I am about the fact that it's formulaic. Just keep it, whoever's sponsoring the maximums this year, and clock the meter up, and let's see another one go flying out of the ground. Cameron Bancroft, skippering Durham.
Yeah, it was an interesting selection, wasn't it? I didn't see that coming at all, especially not in Durham. But again, trying to sort of rehabilitate himself, and you know, he's doing it the right way.
Well, there's an interesting affinity there, isn't there? Because it's a club that's having to sort of rehabilitate itself as well. And I wonder if that it'd be interesting if Durham weren't in the predicament that they are in, they might not have gone down that route. Mm. But maybe they're thinking, you know, we need to refresh this completely. I think there's an argument about actually your overseas player, not that he's just one overseas player anymore, but is whether that is your captain in the first place, let alone someone who's obviously gone through what he's gone through.
Yeah.
There was a lovely article in the current Cricketer magazine comparing that day's razzmatazz at Eden Gardens or Bangalore or wherever it was against the same day's match between one of the counties and Cambridge MCCU at Fenners, and it was an absolutely delightful comparison to draw, and the conclusion was that there is probably equal validity in those two formats, but what's essential is that the MCC universities should not die, should not be allowed to wither, even though I think it might have been Nottinghamshire, somebody was racking up 550 for not many at Fenners, but all the same, the experience, I mean, we know when we've occasionally played above our level, it's intimidating, but it's a tremendous experience as well, and Fenners is a lovely place. In my own view, can't hold a candle to the parks in Oxford, but I'm probably biased. So there we are. Just staying for one second with Bancroft and the Championship and the Royal London, Tim, you got the Lancashire result in the Royal London today?
Yes, I have. Let me just bring it up on the little monitor here. There we go. Yes, so Lancashire, Derbyshire today. Lancashire won by 30 runs, 239 for 6 and off 38, and Derbyshire, Derbyshire for 209 for 7 off 38, and Lancashire won by 30 runs there. So good win for Lancashire.
So that must have been rain affected.
I guess it must have been reduced, mustn't it? There. So
and you've got news of Mumbai Indians and the Sunrisers.
Yes, Mumbai Indians playing Sunrisers of Hyderabad. Just finished. Mumbai Indians 162 for 5 off 20. Sunrisers 162 for 6 off 20, which resulted in I don't know what they call it. Is it a super over?
A super over.
Sunrisers were 8 for 2 off 4 balls, which, as Andy pointed out to me earlier on, concede your final two balls.
You're all out.
And the Mumbai Indians got 9 for no wickets off 3 balls and won the game. So,
I just hope Danny Morrison wasn't in the commentary box, because they wouldn't have kept the roof on if he was. Quite extraordinary. Yeah. We were wondering off air, Matt, whether you would consider super overs in the Surrey Slam.
I'd love to from a spectacle perspective. Unfortunately, we're not blessed with the floodlights, so we would be fighting against the light. Logistics of it would be a challenge. So we make do with a bowl out if it ever arises. Not that it has yet.
I think in many ways, we were talking about this, I actually think the bowl out in many ways is almost more exciting, because it's one bowler, then the bowler from the other team, and backwards and forwards, like the penalty shootout, actually gives it that element of tension.
I suppose the only trouble is it's only testing one facet of the game.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, true,
but true. Yes, I mean, what the few that I have witnessed, it astounds you how few hit the stumps.
So when, so when they, I've never actually witnessed one. So when the bowlers, do they tend to bowl off a full run up, or do they just stand at the crease and bowl, or how do they?
Well, the bowlers I've seen just go back to whatever their normal routine is, because otherwise you'd start.
So they don't just—they're not just at the crease there trying to.
Yeah, so I've seen someone do a 30-odd, 40-odd run up on a bowl out purely because that's what he's always done, and would feel more comfortable. But there is an argument there for simplifying the whole thing.
So I was going to say, just stand at
just
the crease,
just take one step,
and just bowl. Yeah. Oh wow. No, I think that sounds quite exciting, though. I think that's good.
Was it the National Club T20 that went to an indoor bowl out the season before last? I'm sure one of those finals days went to possibly at Loughborough, one of the sports halls anyway.
And I think the T20 when it first launched county-wise, I was saying 2003, I think it was bowl outs were.
Yeah.
So I can remember being at the Oval watching. Mm. I think this was when Ricky Clark was still playing for Surrey, when his first time. I can remember a bowl out there, and it was the same thing, mate. Like you mentioned, how, you know, people, some sort of find it difficult to hit the stumps. Even the pros were finding it difficult to hit the stumps.
Amazing, isn't it?
I did see a game at the Oval. I can't remember what game it was. I think it might be Warwickshire in the quarter final, actually, but yes, I remember. Let's just brought that back to me. That's got to be, 15 years ago.
Yeah. We've done Cameron Bancroft. It is probably time that we approach the World Cup, because we've got about 15 minutes left, that's all. But let's approach it. We've talked earlier on about injuries and incidents in the Surrey squad in particular, and Jason Roy's back spasm. And poor old Sam Billings, he's always been just on the fringe, hasn't he? And never quite. And yet he was successful in that T20 in the West Indies. So very unfortunate for Sam Billings, who I suspect is probably condemned to the life of a mercenary around the world's T20 circuits. And the problem with that, Andy, to me, is that Billings goes to the IPL and doesn't really get a look in any more than Roy did the winter before.
True. I mean, if someone like Sam Billings, who maybe isn't going to be making it as an international cricketer, you can't. You got to say, like, if you've got an opportunity to earn a bit of money and a bit of extra security for the family, then go ahead. Mm. But I mean, it is a real shame, because he had such a promising future. I'm not writing him off, because, you know, he can come back, but it's a shame, especially World Cup year. You don't want it to happen, really.
Gents, we live in an age of virtue signalling, long conversations over pub tables about all that. Many, many years ago, when one of my ex-pupils was a big noise in the Oxford Union, I went to hear David Napley, who was Jeremy Thorpe's solicitor. You may remember Jeremy Thorpe was the disgraced leader of the then Liberal Party before they became the Liberal Democrats. And I heard David Napley propose at the Oxford Union the motion, is the public figure entitled to a private life? And I think that's particularly germane to what we've had. Let's arrive at Alex Hales, if we may, via Joe Clark, who has moved from Worcestershire, I think, to Nottinghamshire. Mm. Nottinghamshire seemed to be trying to hoover up all the good players on the circuit from Stuart Broad and Ben Duckett onwards. Joe Clark, tangential to what went on, but Alex Hepburn jailed for 5 years yesterday for his part in the notorious bedroom incident in the age of hashtag me too, Tim, I suppose. Mm. Even sillier to get involved in things like that and brag about it on social media.
I mean we've probably touched on this sort of thing before, but I can never understand how players like that, who are obviously so talented, seem so set on almost self-destruction. You know, there's a limited period when you're a top professional sportsman. I cannot, maybe that's because I'm not a professional sportsman, but I cannot understand the mindset where you don't just make the most of what you've got in that period, and to get involved in all this other stuff. And it was on WhatsApp, and when it was all laid bare in court, it looked absolutely horrendous, you know, and it's just awful. I never understand it.
Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, I've I've recently been reading the latest biography of W.G. Grace, which is called Amazing Grace. And nothing new under the sun, really, about W.G. It's all been said before, but nicely packaged. And let's not kid ourselves. This sort of stuff, not necessarily the crime involved in what we've just been talking about, but this sort of stuff has always gone on, and W.G. himself is alleged to have been no angel when it came to chasing the ladies on tour down under, even though his pregnant wife was on the tour party with him. So it's always gone on. You think back. I mean, Dennis Compton and Keith Miller wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes in the age of the tabloid press and social media. And more recently, well, Tim, you kindly gave me Derek Pringle's book to read, didn't you? And, you know, what Pringle lays bare out of the 1980s, apart from what Francis Edmonds didn't lay bare before, about Gooch and Gower and Lamb and all that crowd, it's always gone on. But this is a particularly heinous crime. I think it's deeply unfortunate that Joe Clarke is caught up in it, because he's talked of as a potential England batsman when we're still struggling with the top of the order. And interestingly, Notts, well, he's guilty of no crime, fair enough, but Notts have stuck by him, and today, in the wake of what's happened earlier in the week, they've also said that Alex Hales will be playing tomorrow, or whenever their next game is, because they lost yesterday.
Again, that the whole Alex Hales thing is interesting in the sense that he was serving, I think, a 21-day ban for recreational drug use.
That's
which,
right.
Which, from what I've read, is allegedly his second offence, which I think, okay, maybe you could say one offence, okay, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. To get caught again, it just seems incredible. But equally, I find quite incredible is that he got a 21-day ban for recreational drug use, and we talked about Warner and the others. They served, what was it, an 18-month ban?
For Sam Papering the ball.
Yeah. Mm. Now, which of those two is the worst crime? I don't know. I just find that the consistency of the way they're handing out punishments, to me, seems very, very odd.
I suppose the difference is that the one is a cricketing crime against cricket, and the other is a statutory crime according to the law of the land, and a violent one at that.
Exactly.
And there is, therefore, some sort of imbalance, I think.
But I think also there was the fact that there was some talk of it being allegedly covered up, and that he was serving the ban while saying he was off for some personal reasons.
What you haven't mentioned, Tim, of course, is Duff 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 outside the Bristol nightclub last year.
Yeah, indeed. Well, exactly, and that just that adds to the whole problem with Alex Hales.
In which context Ben Stokes is quoted: "It sounds silly, but could Bristol have been the best thing that could have happened to me? Who knows? But maybe in terms of my way of thinking."
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, Stokes, I still think Stokes is suffering mentally from all the things he's put himself through. He's clearly not had particularly great tournaments recently in the IPL. And, you know, he's another one that you wonder whether his mental strength is ever going to actually get to the point where he can perform properly.
Stokes is a strong character. I mean, you see him when he performs, and, you know, he reminds me a lot of Flintoff and of Botham, the way he's a sort of strong man of England cricket. I think he's got that determination about him. The disappointing thing for me about Alex Hales is that, you know, you have a responsibility as a professional sportsman. You know you're going to get tested. You know you're going to have these things put in front of you. Don't let yourself down and your teammates down by putting yourself in a position where you could get caught. Just do not do it.
Well, especially as he's been caught already.
And I think, you know, the England management, you know, for once, I think they've acted quickly and correctly in saying, look, you know, you've let the team down, you've let the management down, I'm sorry. You know, Alex Hales saying he felt betrayed. Well, actually, no, you're the ones that betrayed the England team.
It's the whole thing of not taking responsibility for your own actions, isn't it?
It is.
I don't think ECB had a choice. I think they've done the right thing. Like you said, it's the case of, he's had the shot across the bows plenty of times.
Yeah.
With Stokes, I can see his point, because knowing through my my marriage, I know the area that he grows up in Cockermouth in Cumbria, and there's lots of challenges there socially. And sometimes these guys just need that moment that gives them an adjustment of their priorities and all that sort of stuff. I think his form has been affected more about how he's been utilised by England. I think we kind of sort of pushing him from pillar to post and expecting him to do too much almost. But I don't be surprised if we don't actually see any indiscretions from Mr. Stokes going forward. I'm going to touch wood now.
Touch wood, let's all touch wood. I've done the brewery tour in Cockermouth years ago. It's a good way to spend a morning. About 30 seconds, gents, if we may, on Jofra Archer.
Well, I mean, personally, I think that what they've done in selecting him for the outer squads, if you like, is the best way to do it. I think Chris Wokes was getting a little bit jumpy about Jofra Archer being brought straight in. Let's be honest, there aren't many bowlers in England that can bowl at the speed that Archer does. I think if he performs well in these warm-up games, there's no reason why he shouldn't be in the side. And the Wokes talked about we're all mates and stuff. Well, at the end of the day, it's a professional side. We've never won the World Cup. We might win the World Cup with Archer in the team. I think he should be in the side.
Yeah, you can tell who's been threatened by his presence, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of with you. This is nothing new, this whole guys who have become available for England through their nationality at a different time. It just so happens that it's happened with the World Cup on the horizon. I agree.
New, is it? They've been talking about him for about 18 months.
It's been coming.
Yeah. I mean, he's performed consistently well for Sussex. He's performed consistently well in the IPL. You've got to give him a chance.
But it may be that you need two who can do that, because clearly in West Indies, Mark Wood, blue hot, blue cold. It's very difficult, isn't it, with the foreshortening of television, not just to pick up slip catches, but to work out how quick somebody is really bowling. I think you only ever pick that up if you're side on at ground level and you can't see the blooming thing go whizzing past.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, we can talk about the World Cup again next time, and lots of other things to talk about as well. If I may, I'm just going to go through the UK and IPL fixtures for the rest of this month. It's quite extraordinary. Tomorrow, Ireland versus England T20. Sunday, England versus Pakistan T20, and Ireland versus West Indies versus Bangladesh tri-series starts. Next Tuesday, the IPL playoffs. Wednesday the 8th, the first of five ODIs between England and Pakistan, and two between Scotland and Afghanistan. Friday the 10th, the Royal London quarters. Sunday the 12th, the Royal London semis. Tuesday the 14th, the start of three blocks of county championship up to the end of the month, seven more in June and July. Saturday the 18th, two between Scotland and Sri Lanka. Sunday the 19th, Ireland versus Afghanistan, two matches. Friday the 24th to the following Tuesday, World Cup warm-ups. England have Australia and Afghanistan. Saturday the 25th, the Royal London final. And Thursday the 30th, the World Cup opens with England versus South Africa at the Oval. How's that for a month of pro cricket?
That is all packed in, isn't it, there? There's plenty of cricket in May. But, the schedulers have certainly managed to squeeze all that stuff in. But it's a packed schedule.
All we need now is the weather to do its best rather than its worst.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
So there we are. We've got just about 2 minutes to wrap things up. And I've got a couple of quotations that I'd like to leave our listeners with tonight. I know that one of these we've used on the show before, but I'm lucky enough to be going to the RAC cricket dinner fortnight's time in Pall Mall, because David Gower is the speaker that evening, and I absolutely treasure, we've talked a bit about women's cricket as usual, we haven't talked about broadcasting, but I treasure that exchange when Issa Gower, trying to be down with the kids and modern, said at some point last year, there was a spell of an hour and a half when he didn't play a single shot into the covers. That's 42% less than normal. And Gower, with just the right pause, then queried, have you ever been an accountant or a statistician?
David Gower, brilliant, isn't he? Absolutely brilliant.
I think we do without David Gower at our absolute peril. Before my final quotation, we've done Ben Stokes. Is there a possibility, Ryan Tendoskata has hinted, is there a possibility that in the Ashes in August and September, England are going to ask Sir Alastair Cook to do as Cyril Washbrook did all those years ago in 1956 and make a comeback from retirement?
Would he want to? I don't know. I'm not sure whether he'd actually want to come back.
He strikes me as the sort of guy that actually wouldn't do it, but that doesn't mean we wouldn't ask.
No, but I would. But I mean,
wasn't he interviewed recently, and he coyly said, "Well, you know, we'll come to that. You know, we'll cover that when it comes." I think he might, but I hope that they don't need to.
It depends on the situation, doesn't it? If you were an ex-England captain with all the runs under your belt, like Alistair Cook is, and England needed to win the final Test to win the Ashes, and you were asked to come and play.
It's a
positive
challenge, I think, for him in a way.
Well, it is, but also it's that coming back and being the hero. I mean, if as a professional sportsman, it doesn't get any better than that. And in an Ashes tournament, I think it would depend on the situation. I think if it was a dead rubber game, he'd say no thanks. Probably wouldn't be asked in that situation. But if it actually meant something that he could change the actual game or the tournament, I think he might come.
We decided last time that it was too late for Ian Bell, quality player though he may be. He's injured now in any case.
Yep.
Andy Tharp from Mogadore Wanderers, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in on the show tonight.
Thank you very much indeed, it's been a pleasure.
And Matt, I've already said thanks once, but you've shifted mountains to be here with us tonight. And all we can do as far as you're concerned is wish you a wonderful Surrey Slam.
Thank you.
Tim, thanks as usual. I close, surprise, surprise, on a quote from the House of Commons. This is Conservative MP and Brexiteer Andrew Bridgen on the Speaker. What we've got is a Speaker who is supposed to be the umpire, but wants to be the opening batsman and opening bowler as well. You've been listening to the May edition of On the Front Foot from Susie 103.4, real local radio for Redhill, Reigate, Hawley and Crawley. As soon as is humanly possible, we'll get an edit of tonight's chat show on the website, susieradio.com, and we'll be back on the first Thursday in June. My name's David Jay. Thank you very much for listening tonight.